over the hump and towards the weekend with plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, takeaways from last night in the NBA. The arm race that's going on in that Heat-Celtics series. Plus, we had the draft lottery last night. I'll give you my initial thoughts on the upcoming NBA draft and the players involved. Plus, Tiger Woods spoke publicly about Phil Mickelson. We'll get to those comments coming up. We'll talk golf with our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesday, and preview the PGA Championship. We'll do that an hour from now. When should we expect to see the rookie quarterbacks in the NFL this year? And are the Panthers sleeping on a goldmine? One of the most interesting teams in each of the divisions in the NFL this year. And what do they have in common? And speaking of quarterbacks, one quarterback in the NFL is broadening his horizons. Is it a good idea? We'll get to that later on. We got plenty to do over the next few hours. Talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling next hour. Anything else that comes up over the next few hours with you until 3 on this Wednesday. You can join the conversation throughout 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing phenomenal this morning. Actually, this afternoon, I apologize. It's been a great morning. Obviously, a great night of basketball. Got a little nervous there in the first half, but came back strong. That's Heat culture. We've talked about it. We know this. Beautiful day here in the Lowcountry and a beautiful day to be a basketball fan. Luke, glad to be here.
Yeah, if you're a Heat fan, at least. I don't know if Celtics fans are feeling too beautiful today. By the way, tough night. Well, it depends what side of the fence you're on. Either it was a tough night if you're a baseball fan around here, or it's a great night. Clemson lost 17-2 against Coastal Carolina. The Gamecocks lost 8-3 against Charlotte at home. And the Citadel was down 14-1 against the College of Charleston and ended up losing 15-8. Now, mostly in-state teams, right? So depending on which side of the matchup you're on, you either had a great night or a terrible night. Tough night. What has happened to Clemson after their great start? And the Gamecocks should never be 500 in baseball. I imagine a change will be coming very soon to that program. And a tough loss for the Citadel. College of Charleston's really good. And how about the fact that last night they beat the Citadel by 7 runs, which is, of course, a lot in baseball, and their RPI goes down. Isn't that crazy? Anyways, Trent's happy today because the Heat won last night. Let's start with that. It was an impressive second half for the Miami Heat. They went on at one point a 22-2 run and buried the Celtics last night in Game 1. The third quarter last night for the Celtics was their worst quarter of any kind over the last 5 years in terms of fewest amount of points, fewest amounts of shots made. Lousy. Now, I still think the Celtics win the series. Remember, they lost Game 1 to Milwaukee, even fell behind 3-2, still found a way to win that series. But here's what I find most interesting about this matchup between the Celtics and the Heat. This is a battle for superstar status. Now, the Lebatard Show does some bit with like a superstar club. I don't know what they call it. There was a whole drama, piece of drama last week because Fox Sports ripped it off and they called it something else. I don't know. But the idea is that for every superstar you put in, you have to take another one out. It's like people who do top five lists or just mention top five, right? Who I think he's a top five player. But you say that about 10 people. It's like, well, every time you say someone's top five or top 10, you realize you have to take somebody off that list. You have to remove somebody if you're putting a new member in. Same idea here. It's like when you go out to a club and you have the bouncer up front and there's a certain number of people that can go in. So you have to wait till somebody leaves before you could go in. Similar idea. There's only so much room is the point. We can only have so many superstars in the NBA at one time. And so in this case, there may only be room for one more. There's one more spot available at the moment, and you have Jimmy Butler and you have Jason Tatum both waiting outside. And at the start of the playoffs, I doubted these two teams because I doubted these two stars. I thought they had a limit, a ceiling to them that fell short of a championship. I thought they were only stars. And you need superstars to win championships. Dallas has a superstar. The Golden State Warriors, he is a warrior. They clearly have a superstar. But I wasn't sure about these two teams, the Heat and the Celtics. I thought this was their limitation. Good teams had a good player, didn't know if he was good enough to lead them to a championship. And maybe I owe Jimmy Butler an apology. Because the playoffs are where legacies are built. More so than the regular season, right? And so I have my tiers of clutchness. It's like Dante's Inferno. I bust it out every so often here on the Morrow Midday Show. The different levels to clutchness. And it's all based on the playoffs. We don't care what you do in the regular season, how many game winners you hit in the regular season. It doesn't matter so much. It's about the playoffs. And so the top tier in my tiers of clutchness, in case you forgot from the last time, the very top tier, the greatest to ever do it, that get even better in the big moments. Guys like Michael Jordan and Mariano Rivera. The next tier, you have great players that become the all-time greats in the big moments. Curt Schilling, Fernando Valenzuela. Then you have great players that just continue to be great. They're always great. Derek Jeter, Kobe Bryant. And then you have the guys that are not really that good, but are really clutch. Eli Manning, Nick Foles, Louis Soho back in the day in baseball. And then the lowest level is the guys that are really good until the big spot. Kind of like a Peyton Manning for a long time. A-Rod, Paul George, yes, Braves fans, even Greg Maddux wasn't as good in the playoffs as he was in the regular season. Those are kind of the tiers to this thing. And for Jimmy Butler, he's in that tier where he's a good player in the regular season and then becomes even better in the playoffs. Kind of like a Curt Schilling. Curt Schilling's Hall of Fame career is really based off of his playoff success. He was a good pitcher in the regular season, wasn't a Hall of Fame pitcher. But then come October, he was a Hall of Famer. I was like, whoa, this guy's one of the best pitchers in the league. Schilling, you know, built his legacy in the playoffs. And I think maybe quietly, Jimmy Butler's kind of doing the same thing. For his career, Jimmy Butler averages more points in the playoffs per game than the regular season. He steps up his game in the big moments. Right, this year, he averaged 21 points in the regular season. Good, not great. The leading scorer is up closer towards 30. There's a big gap between the top scorers in the league and Jimmy Butler. 21 points per game, it's nothing to sneeze at. But it's not like, oh, hold on, man, this guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer. And then he gets to the playoffs, and that average goes from 21 to 30. He's averaging 30 points per game in the playoffs. He has increased his scoring by almost 50% in the playoffs, where it gets tougher, where you play the better teams, and you play maybe a more compact schedule, and you play the same team over and over again, and they try to game plan and adjust, and they're actually trying hard and playing tough defense. He's getting better. Last night against the number one defense in the league, he went for 41 points. He scored 24 of those in the second half. He scored, what, 17 alone in the third quarter to put the game away. Meanwhile, Jason Tatum made one shot in the second half. He disappeared in another second half. And when the Celtics needed him most, he wasn't there. They were down Al Horford, who bailed him out of one game. They were down Marcus Smart last night. You're missing two important pieces. And when that happens, you got to rely more on your starters. Last year, no Kyrie, no James Harden. Kevin Durant in Game 7 against Milwaukee went for 40. Right, when you're a little shorthanded, that's when the stars need to step up. Tatum did not. He disappeared in another second half. He had 10 points in Game 3 against Milwaukee last series. He was the game's leading scorer just once in the seven games. He was the team's leading scorer in just two of the four wins. And while he was great in Game 6, he was fantastic, and he helped keep the Celtics season alive. In Game 7, he was not the leading scorer, and he had 7 turnovers. He had as many baskets as turnovers in the biggest game of the year. I don't get the crowning of Jason Tatum as some sort of superstar yet. The potential is there, but not the consistency. In Game 3 of that series against Milwaukee, when he had only 10 points, he also had only 1 assist and 3 rebounds. He did nothing. A superstar will impact the game whether they're shooting it well or not. If they're having an off scoring night, they'll go grab 10 rebounds. They'll have 7 assists. They'll start passing it off to teammates, setting them up. They'll go on defense and make some big stops. They figure, well, I'm not much help on offense, but I'm going to wear you down on defense instead. I'll make some plays for my team on the other end of the floor. That's not really Tatum's game. A superstar will impact a game no matter what, even when they're not at their best. Even LeBron James. How often does LeBron James only score 10 points in a game? And when he's not shooting well, how often do you come away from that game thinking, like, wow, LeBron really didn't do much? No, he'll make a big block. He'll have a big steal. He'll make a couple of nice passes, even when he's not scoring the basketball. And that leads me back to Jimmy Butler. Last night, his combination of points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, the 5 most important categories. You total it up, it's the highest number for any player in any playoff game ever. The combination for Jimmy Butler last night, points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, more than Michael Jordan ever put together. More than LeBron James has ever put together. That was statistically one of the most impressive performances we've had in the postseason. He does it on both ends of the floor, more so than a Jason Tatum. And I think we're just more infatuated with offense, right? It's why all the leagues are changing their rules to get more offense. It's why we love Michael Jordan. When you think of Michael Jordan, what do you think of? You probably think of him floating through the air. You think of the dunks. You think of that shot over Craig Elo. And maybe you think of the last shot he ever took in a Chicago Bulls uniform. Right, the pull-up from the foul line over Byron Russell. He holds the follow-through up in the air. You can picture it in your mind. It's a beautiful image. But what you probably don't recall is that in that very same game, he got a steal before on the defensive end on a help defensive play that helped set up that game-winning shot. We don't think of the defensive plays. We think of that shot instead and Jordan holding the hand up. We care about offense. And so Jason Tatum has the offensive potential. He shows it at times. He can be really talented on that end of the floor. But Jimmy Butler gets it done on both ends of the floor. He's always been tough on defense, and now his scoring is up as well. 41 last night. Butler was drafted 30th out of Marquette, didn't start until his third year in the league. He's known as a little bit of a pain, tough to get along with at times, doesn't really have that personality that he puts himself out there. These are all things that probably hurt him. And while he's not a top 10 player in the league during the regular season, probably not even top 20, he becomes one in the playoffs. His stats increase in the playoffs compared to the regular season. His stats in the playoffs increase every round. If you go and you look at Jimmy Butler's career, he averages 18 points per game in the first round. Then it goes up to 22 in the second round. It remains at 22 in the conference finals, and in his one NBA finals, he averaged 26. So not only as the season goes on does he get better, as each round of the playoffs, as the games get more important, he scores more points. He plays even better. Meanwhile, Jason Tatum disappeared last night. While Butler came up big, therefore, so too did his team. Tatum disappeared, so too did the Celtics. And here's what's maybe most impressive. 32 years old, on his fourth team, 500 playoff record, has been in the playoffs each of the last 5 years, wasn't a starter his first couple of years. Who did I just describe? Well, based off of the first 10 minutes of the show, you probably think Jimmy Butler. Actually, that's James Harden. But it's also Jimmy Butler. They're both 32 years old. They're both on their fourth team. They both have a 500 playoff record. They've both been in the playoffs each of the last 5 years. Neither one started their first 2 years in the league. And yet we consider James Harden some sort of like all-time great, not Jimmy Butler. And at the same time, while they're both 32 right now, it looks like James Harden's career is essentially over. And Jimmy Butler looks like he's at the peak of his – it looks like he just hit his prime with the way he's been playing this postseason. This is the best we've ever seen Jimmy Butler. And he's at 32. At 32, James Harden seems to be declaring himself out of the league. At 32, Jimmy Butler seems to be declaring himself as a superstar. And maybe that's most impressive. Here is Vince Carter this morning on ESPN's Get Up, and then you'll hear Pat Beverly, the star of the week, at the end of the clip, talking about Jimmy Butler and how underappreciated he is.
He doesn't get the respect that he deserves, as well as the Miami Heat. And that's what he said. He said, I'm going to prove it. I'm going to show you. And he does. Yes, he takes a different approach, in my opinion, in regular season, but he understands you get paid, that's when it all counts in the playoffs, and that's when that's when he rises and shows that he is Showtime playoff Jimmy Butler, because when you guard Jimmy Butler in the regular season, he's a facilitator. He makes guys better. He gets guys going. In the playoffs, Jimmy Butler goes at your neck, as well as guards.
Yeah, and you got to give a lot of credit to his what he does to his body, his conditioning, to be able to look, I mean, these numbers, they look silly, like video game numbers, like 41, 9, 5, and 4. Like, and I think we're missing some blocks on there, too.
Yep.
You know, so, like, you got to give him a lot of credit, give Miami Heat a lot of credit.
Yeah, absolutely. Vince Carter, Pat Beverly this morning, give Jimmy Butler some credit. And I'll give myself some credit. I guess yesterday on Get Up, they did the best players left in the playoff. They said Jimmy Butler didn't even crack their top five. Is that true? How is that possible? At least yesterday, I said Jimmy Butler is the second-best player remaining in the postseason. And then he went out and played like that last night. Jason Tatum, I put number four. I put him as the worst of the four stars left. He disappeared last night. He's done too much of that. Jimmy Butler has been fantastic at both ends of the floor, and he gets better in the big spots like he did last night in the second half. Let me shift to this. Last night, we also had the draft lottery. If we look ahead to the draft, the Orlando Magic, they won the first overall pick fourth time. The Kings are left out of the top three. We'll see what happens. We have plenty of time to get ready for the draft. If I were to rank the top players in the draft, if I was in charge, I'm taking Paolo Banchero out of Duke, number one. I take Jabari Smith, number two, out of Auburn. A 6'10", good body, had the best three-point percentage in the SEC, can do a little bit of everything. I would then put Jaden Ivey, number three. He's the most athletic guard, and in March Madness, maybe a small sample size, but he averaged 20 points per game on the biggest stage. Keegan Murray, I would put at number four. And then maybe at 5, I get to Chet Holmgren. Although, I tell you what, the biggest wild card in all this is Shaedon Sharpe. And maybe I would even take him before I take Holmgren. I'm very concerned about Chet. When he becomes an NBA player, when he's drafted in a few weeks, he'll become just the second player ever in NBA history to be 7 foot tall and less than 200 pounds. The other one was also taken in the first round and so far has averaged 8 points per game for his career. I'm concerned about that size. I think back to guys like Giannis, Anthony Davis. They worked out, right? They were very thin guys that had to bulk up for the NBA. But they also had broad shoulders. You could see that they had that potential. They just needed to fill out. And Anthony Davis, if we're being honest, right, has had all sorts of injuries in the NBA. Not telling you because he's too small, but maybe there's something to it. Kevin Durant's another one. People will compare Holmgren to Durant. Durant was so tiny. I mean, he still is. He's got those thin arms. And one of the classic clips that always makes the rounds is when Colin Cowherd said, "I wouldn't draft Kevin Durant. The guy can't bench press 130 pounds. He's not going to be a star." But that was a legitimate concern at the time. Now, the idea was, the belief is actually that he has really long arms. Anybody that has long arms, you know it's harder to bench press because you got to move the weight further. But regardless, still, the concern says, right, Durant, he's too thin. He can't get it done. He has proven a lot of people wrong. But Holmgren's not a Kevin Durant. As I always say, Kevin Durant's the most talented offensive player we've ever had. If you were building a basketball player, you would build a Kevin Durant. I don't think Holmgren fits that same category. I think back to Kristaps Porzingis. Tall guy, thin. Hasn't quite worked out in the NBA. Shaun Bradley, tall guy, was considered too thin. He used to. They put out a video of the top 10 best dunks on Shaun Bradley, who was 7'6". He used to get dunked on. He wasn't big enough to compete in the NBA. I think the same for Chet Holmgren. I think he's the anti-Zion Williamson. Williamson, we were concerned that he's too big. Chet, we're concerned he's not big enough. I'd be very concerned. I think he goes in the top three. Most people will tell you top three are Banchero, Smith, and Chet, and they may put them all in different orders. I'd leave him out of the top three. He's probably not in my top five. I would not take a chance on Chet Holmgren. Here's Rob Dowster of the All 68, the Field of 68 podcast. He does a good job covering college basketball. These were his concerns, or at least what he's hearing from people about the concerns of Gonzaga's Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, I think we saw some of it in the NCAA tournament, right? He had issues with the strength and athleticism of Jalen Duren. He had issues with dealing with Jalen Williams of Arkansas in the game that Gonzaga lost in the Sweet 16 this season. I think that there's two issues for me, right? The biggest one is that he's not going to be able to hold his ground physically, which wouldn't be a problem if you could trust on the offensive end of the floor that he would be able to take advantage of someone that's a little bit bigger and more physical than him. But he's a great shooter. You're never going to contest his release because of how high it is, but for someone with that level of skill and that level of handle, I don't know how he's going to be able to create separation on his shots. He was more of a catch and shoot guy than he was put it on the floor, create something for himself in the half court. In transition, he's fine. But that's my question is, in the half court, where are you going to find him being able to create his own?
I think back to Anthony Edwards. I was surprised Anthony Edwards went first overall. The Citadel faced him. I saw him in person, and you could see the potential, but I thought he was still a little too raw. I thought he was going to be a little bit of a project for a couple years. And while maybe he went first overall, what I was really surprised about was how good he was so quickly in the NBA. What you couldn't doubt was that he had an NBA body, and that's what intrigued a lot of people. They knew, like, yeah, he's kind of raw, doesn't have a great jumper, but we can work on that stuff. He already has a body to compete in the NBA, and boy, has he. Anthony Edwards has been fantastic. I could see when we played him when he was at Georgia, I could see the potential. But I never thought he would be this good this quick. He's been fantastic 2 years into the league. I want somebody like that. An NBA body. I want a Jabari Smith who's 6'10 and can shoot it from outside. Even Banchero, right? Can get up and down the floor. He's tall. He's athletic. I think he could bang around a little bit. Chet Holmgren's 20 years old. He's 1 year removed from high school. He's 7 foot, 194 pounds. How does that work? 7 foot, 194 pounds. And we saw this year against some of the better, more athletic teams, he struggled. In the tournament, especially against Memphis, he had 9 points. Memphis was one of the most athletic teams in the country. And that's at the college level. You can clip this. Make sure we're recording it. It'll be on the podcast. Remember this. I'm sure he's going to be drafted in the top three in the draft. I would stay away. I don't think Chet Holmgren will be a top-tier NBA player. I just don't think he has the body. I'm looking for a guy like Anthony Edwards. That, hey, you can work on your jump shot, but you got the body. You'll come in here and bang with these guys. Right? You drafted Anthony Edwards. Same idea. Anthony Edwards came into the league when he was 19. If you're going to compete at 19 right away, I need somebody that can keep up. LeBron James, Dwight Howard, These young guys that came into the league that had ridiculous bodies that you've never seen before, it allows them to compete right away. I'm not going to draft Holmgren top three and then hope I could get 30 pounds on him just so he can last out there. I'm staying away. Doesn't have an NBA body. That's what I look for. You can teach some of the other things. They can get familiar with some of the other things in the NBA. But if you don't have that body, at least early on, right, you can't compete out there, I may not be interested. Anthony Edwards is a lot better, quicker than people anticipated because he was ready, just body-wise, physique, to come in and compete right away, and he has. I don't think Holmgren will be ready right away. 7 foot, 194 pounds, that concerns me. Coming up, we get ready for the PGA Championship this weekend, starting tomorrow. Tiger Woods spoke publicly about Phil Mickelson. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we get set for the PGA Championship this weekend, starting tomorrow, Jeremy Schilling will join us at 1 to break it all down. And in a few moments, we'll hear from Tiger Woods as he addressed the Phil Mickelson situation. Phil won't be participating, the defending champ. We were out there last year. He won't be out there this week for the PGA Championship. We'll get to that in just a moment. Because last night, the Miami Heat won game one of this series against the Celtics. Now, I'm one try to build up those around me. I appreciate the hard work done on the show and support those who work hard on the show with me. Yesterday, Trent nailed last night's game.
Did I?
I think he did. Okay. So if we jump in our time machine, let's go back to yesterday during Trent's takes in the final minutes of the show yesterday. Here's what we heard yesterday on the show that rang pretty true in game one last night.
Spo's got the boys going. Heat culture is a real thing. We got guys who step up when they don't have to step up in the correct moments. Tonight's the night. This is a tone setter, Luke. Look for a 15 to 20 point victory tonight for the Miami Ooh. Heat at home in game one. I was sickened by myself, by my own self, Luke, for saying that the Celtics were going to win this series. It ain't happening. Heat in seven, Heat all the way. Miami Heat culture, baby. It's coming home. This is a tone setting game. Let's go out. Let's shut them down defensively. I look for Jimmy Butler, whatever his point total is, Luke. Take the over. No doubt about it. He's going off in game one. Tone setter tonight. It's happening. It's going down. Cannot wait.
There you go. Now, you said 15 to 20. Look, it was an 11-point win. Same idea. If you watched that game last night in the second half, it felt like a 15 to 20-point game. That game was over by the fourth quarter. The Heat put it away in the third. Outscored the Celtics by 25 in the third quarter alone. Ball game. And Jimmy Butler, as you said, take the over. He'll go off. The over-under was 24.5. And boy, did he go off for 41 points last night in the Heat win. I would say you pretty much nailed it last night.
Well, thank you, Luke. You know, when that Heat stadium is rocking, when everybody's wearing white 20,000 deep, that's when guys like Jimmy Butler step up in the moments. This was a statement game. Throat on the neck. You had to do it to him. And I got nervous, like I said, in that first half. Jason Tatum is a full-on problem. He is an absolute problem for the Miami Heat. But without Al Horford and Marcus Smart, you had to take advantage of those two being out. And the Miami Heat sure did. I mean, that third quarter, I texted you, Luke, that third quarter, the defense that was going on was unbelievable. From Bam Adebayo to Tyler Hero to Jimmy Butler, the boys came in and did what they needed to do game one. And I'm excited for the next game.
15 to 20 point win. Look, they outscored the Celtics by 19 in the second half. Same idea. And Jimmy Butler, boy, did he go off. So credit where credit is due. Trent nailed it yesterday. Now, the Heat still haven't lost a home game yet in the playoffs. So we'll see if they can follow it up in game two. Now, I'm curious what happened at halftime. Do you think that when the Heat got into that locker room at halftime and they were trailing by 8, and I thought, oh, boy, my ticket on the Miami Heat covering the 2 tonight is in trouble. Do you think that Eric Spoelstra gathered the guys together and he said, I got the perfect thing? And he referenced Chumbawamba tub thumping yesterday. Do you think that's what it was?
You know, I wouldn't You know, no, because Eric Spoelstra is a winner and he is a champion. Sean Payton is a champion, but Eric Spoelstra would never do something like that. Spo, that's just disrespectful, Luke, to even say that he would, you know, quote a Chumbawamba song, you know, during the halftime. No, I'm probably – here's what happened during halftime. Jimmy Butler walked in that locker room, smacked all the boys around and said, you know, we got to step up in the big moments. Here we go. Put the team on his back. 27 points in the second half. That's what you want, Luke.
Spoelstra walked in and said, fellas, we get knocked down, but then we get up again. You're never going to keep us down, said by the great philosopher Chumbawamba in 1997. Oof. Yeah, Sean Payton is a champion, but again, you know, no wonder he needed Bountygate to win that championship because his halftime speeches weren't going to get it done. Casey missed it. On the show yesterday, we were talking about Sean Payton. We played the audio as he gave a speech at the graduation for Loyola, and that's how he ended things, by quoting Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba. That was his big send-off to the guys and gals as they go off into the world. You may get knocked down, but get up again, in the great words of Chumbawamba. Impressive third quarter by the Heat to put away the Celtics, and now game two. Like I said, the Heat haven't lost at home all postseason. You go up 2-0. I know you're going back to Boston, but that'll be intriguing. I think the Celtics still win the series. And I picked the Heat to win yesterday, so I wasn't all that surprised by the victory. But, boy, Jimmy Butler looked good. Oh, and also, last thing on this, then we'll get to the golf. Bobby gave you a hard time, right, about originally saying Celtics, then you switched to the Heat. But, hey, as long as you're right, and you nailed it last night, so no one, you wake up and it came to you. You had an epiphany and realized, hold on, the Heat, that's the right pick, and so far so good.
Luke, I put on my analyst hat, right? I was trying to use my logical Tim Legler analyst hat about this series, and then I woke up yesterday morning and said, you know, what am I doing? I was upset with myself. I looked in the mirror and said, that's not the guy who I want to be right now. I'm a Miami Heat lifer. I need these boys to win. It was just disrespectful on my own part to pick the Celtics to win this series. It's, I mean, what was I thinking, Luke? It was in the moment. I was getting pressured. And yeah, as soon as we started the show, you know what Bobby Harton does? Immediately brings it up and says, oh, yeah, you wimp, you change your take. No, I'm just cheering for my team. Take the analyst hat off and put the fan hat on. That's what I did.
And then he complained about not getting a pie for 3 hours. we got the PGA Championship coming up starting tomorrow. We'll talk about it with Jeremy Schilling at the top of next hour. But here is Tiger Woods. This is interesting. And it's funny how this works. Before we get to the audio, you know, I always reference Seinfeld. It's my favorite show of all time. I think it's been a while since I've had a Seinfeld reference on the show, or at least that's what I tell myself when I bring it up all the time. But there's an episode where Jerry says, you know, I'm even Steven, and I always have one friend on top and one on the bottom. And then it'll alternate. At one point, Elaine was on top, George was on the bottom. Nothing would go George's way. Everything was going Elaine's way. And then in one of the episodes, it flip-flopped. And now George was on top, and he was getting all the breaks, and Elaine was having a rough time. And Jerry, as he said, I'm always consistent. I'm just in the middle. I'm even Steven. I lose $20. I find $20 in my pants pocket the next day. But I say all this because it's really interesting what's happening in golf. Phil Mickelson was on top, not from a golf perspective, not a performance perspective, but I think if you asked just golf fans, I could tell you I was always more of a Phil guy. I always loved Phil. I was never a huge Tiger fan. I always appreciated his greatness. I liked watching him. But if you told me, like, who's your favorite golfer? I prefer Phil Mickelson. I'd rather grab a beer with Phil than Tiger. And then Tiger had all that off-the-course stuff in his, you know, relationship, and that probably turned him off or turned a lot of people off on Tiger. And now we kind of flip-flop. Now Tiger is on top. He's answering questions about Phil Mickelson, who's on the bottom. Tiger's the one who's become like the moral compass for Phil Mickelson. Where have we gone? What has happened in this seesaw where Tiger used to be on the bottom of that seesaw? Phil was up top, and now they've flip-flopped. So with that said, here was Tiger yesterday, now answering questions about Mickelson's issues. Here's what Tiger had to say about Phil.
It's always disappointing when the defending champion's not here. Phil has said some things that I think a lot of us who are committed to the tour and committed to the legacy of the tour have pushed back against. And he's taken some personal time. And we all understand that, but I think that some of his views and how the tour could be run and should be run, been a lot of disagreement there. But as we all know, as a professional, we miss him being out here. I mean, he's a big draw for the game of golf. He's just taking his time, and you know, we all wish him the best when he comes back. Obviously, we're going to have difference of opinions that how he sees the tour, and we'll go from there.
Tiger Woods yesterday and Phil Mickelson. I like what he said at the end. Like, we'll have difference of opinions, but we would still like to have him out here. I may not agree with everything he says or he thinks, but I'd still like to have him out here competing. And I think that's important, especially nowadays when it comes to, like, a lot of political issues. How many people have you seen, like, end or sever relationships because they're maybe a Republican and you're a Democrat or vice versa? Who cares? And I have buddies who have different opinions on everything. We have sports debates. We debate about music, whatever, just lifestyle, things you do in life, maybe politics. I don't really get into politics. But it doesn't matter. I still love them. Right? We don't have to agree on everything. And so I like that from Tiger. I think that's an important message for really everything in life. You don't have to agree on it. You're not going to agree on everything with everybody. And life would be boring if you did. We're all going to have different opinions. That's the whole idea of this industry right here. I come on here. I give you my opinions. You drive around, you listen, maybe you disagree, you could always reach out to the show, but it's supposed to, right? That's why all the shows on sports, they call them embrace the debate. You put two guys there that have different opinions, and then they just yap at each other for 3 hours. And people tune in and watch it. But it doesn't mean you can't be friends with somebody or you can't work with somebody because, oh, you know what? He thinks this about that subject. Who cares? We all have different opinions. Get over it. So I like that idea. Look, a lot of the golfers may not like what Phil was saying or doing or trying to do or his thought process, but doesn't mean they want him off the tour. Like, oh, keep that guy away. We can't compete on the same course as that guy. Because also they know Phil better than any of us. And everybody, you know, says something stupid or makes a dumb mistake or, again, has a ridiculous belief, whatever it may be. But that doesn't define somebody, one mistake or one comment or one thought or one piece of philosophy, whatever it is. So anyways, that was my main takeaway. I heard that from Tiger. I thought, yeah, I like that. I wish everybody thought that way, that you can have different opinions and still get along with somebody or at least still work alongside somebody. Now, when it comes to Phil Mickelson, you know, it is crazy how quickly things have changed. A year ago, if you were to say, right, only one of these two guys are going to participate in the PGA Championship, Tiger or Phil, of course, I think we all would have said, yeah, Phil, he just won the damn thing. Tiger almost killed himself in a car accident. He's not going to be out there. And yet here we are. It's crazy how this stuff works. And Tiger's going to be participating, and Phil Mickelson will not. What I would say in regards to Phil is that at a certain point, I don't know. I feel like at a certain point, you're almost like hiding from this. You got to face the music. Now, while he may or may not be suspended, this is a different event. This is separately sanctioned. He could play in the PGA Championship this weekend if he wants. In fact, we'll get into this with Jeremy, and we already talked about it last week, right? But he, like, signed up, and then he backed out. You know, he at least threw his name in the ring by the deadline to leave that door open, and then he backed out where he's not going to be there. So at least, you know, he thought about it, gave himself a chance to participate this week. He's not going to. At this point, I almost feel like for Phil, like, at a certain point, you just got to face the music. You said what you said. People got ticked off. And now you got to kind of confront it. Like, a lot of athletes have a bad game, and then they don't talk to the media after the game. I think that's soft. You had a bad game. You got to face the music. You got to be responsible. Maybe Phil just doesn't want to go there because he knows all the questions. Right? Maybe he's waiting for it to blow over or something changes. Because if he showed up this week, you knew all the questions would be about those comments, about that Saudi Arabian back tour. But you know what, Phil? At a certain point, you kind of have to face this head on. You can't be running from it. That'd be my advice. Now, I don't work in PR, but I'd say, like, just go on and get this over with. You answer the questions once, maybe we're done with it. Heck, you apologize, right? We love apologies. We love second chances. We love comeback stories. Look at Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods did some crummy things off the course, too. That's okay. Everybody still loves him. But at a certain point, like, you know, just go out there, face the music, and rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get through this. Instead, I feel like you're still kind of just hiding from it, and the story is just going to keep lingering. And we get these more details. Another book's coming out. The book just came out from Shipnuck that includes this anecdote. Another book's coming out from the guy that apparently Phil owes a bunch of money on from gambling. Some crook. And we get all these other stories. I don't know. If I'm Phil, I think I want to try to control some of that narrative. I want to get out there and just finally, you know, get past this. Rip that Band-Aid off. Get back to playing golf this weekend while you can, you know, when you can in the PGA Championship and try to move forward. That's just me. And try to make some money, too, for those gambling debts. But that's just my thought. PGA Championship begins tomorrow. We'll break it down with Jeremy coming up at the top of next hour. Trent, do you think we need to get you back on the Tiger Woods update desk the next couple of days?
I definitely think that that's going to need to be a thing. I already, you know, Tiger Woods plus 7,000 to win the PGA Championship, so I think all eyes need to be on the big cat as he's prowling around the course. Absolutely.
Perfect. We'll keep you up to date the next couple of days with Tiger out there, and we'll talk about it next hour with Jeremy Schilling. When we come back, when should we expect to see the rookie quarterbacks in the NFL this year? And do the Panthers have themselves the best sleeper of the quarterback draft class? The Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, I'm free.
Ventura Boulevard and all the bad boys.
Coming up, when can we expect to see each of the rookie quarterbacks from this draft class? And did the Panthers get themselves the steal to draft? We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. You know, it's not as fun of an activity. We do this each year, these quarterbacks. It's not as fun this year because only one quarterback went in the first two rounds. Some of these guys we may not see at all this year or should even expect to see them at all this year. But this was on Crane and Company, a podcast for the Daily Wire, where they were talking about Matt Corral. They're very high on Matt Corral. This is the host of the show, Jay Crane, who believes Matt Corral may be the sleeper in all this and may play a big role for the Panthers this year. Here's what Jay Crane had to say on Corral.
Matt Corral may have the best chance of making the biggest impact early. And this isn't one of those takes where you just throw something out there. We've been talking about this for a while. We watched Matt at Ole Miss. We watched him grow under the tutelage of Lane Kiffin and Jeff Lebby, who's now the OC at Oklahoma while Lane stayed the head coach at Ole Miss. And some quarterbacks just have that it factor. Some people call it moxie. People call it awareness, swag, however you want to put it. Matt Corral can do a lot of things. His bag's really deep. He can make the throw on the out. He can throw the whole shot. He can lollipop the screen. He can throw the fastball and the changeup, per se. But what makes Matt Corral different to me is he's not afraid to make any throw, but he also has the wherewithal to have a good feel for what's going on. He can diagnose coverages. He's able to read defenses like a Harry Potter book. And he can run when he has to. Now, he's got to be a lot smarter as a runner in the NFL. And it's amazing how the NFL has a way of teaching guys that. He'll be told before the season starts. But looking in front of him, it's really just Sam Darnold. Not worried about Dylan Cheek or any of these other guys. And Darnold, while he is a good player and has a chance to be a pretty good quarterback, tends to get hurt, tends to struggle sometimes. And all it takes is a little bit of that door opening to give a guy like Matt Corral a chance. Drew Bledsoe goes down, Tom Brady comes in. Now, I'm not saying Matt Corral is going to be Tom Brady, but there's many instances of guys getting injured, the next guy stepping in and doing really well and having a chance to take that job. Sam Darnold is not established in the NFL. He's a name that a lot of people know, but it's not like people are banging down the door left and right to get this guy. They really weren't banging down the door left and right to get Matt Corral. And I think that plays to his personality in a way that a lot of people don't understand. I think Matt Corral might as well have an NIL deal with Golden Flake while he was in college. He's got such a big chip on his shoulder. But don't be shocked. If something happens to Sam Darnold, and I hope he does not get hurt, or if he struggles, if Matt Corral gets a chance to go in and steals the hearts and minds of Panthers fans and has a big game.
Brandon Company, I'm Matt Corral. They're big fans of Corral over there. Now, look, there's a reason why he went in the third round. There's a reason why he dropped on some draft boards. There are some current concerns, fair or otherwise, about Corral off the field. He's coming off an injury. Think back to Tua and how that's worked out. Anytime you take a quarterback coming off an injury should always be a concern. And then also my concern is just the offense he played in. He really popped when Lane Kiffin arrived. And with Lane Kiffin, you may not like the guy. You may not want to give him credit. He's one of the best offensive coaches in college football, and he makes things easier on his quarterback. And we saw that with Corral. And so I'm curious about now you take him out of that system, you put him in the NFL, how does he look at that level? I'm not as high. I'm not going to tell you Matt Corral's not going to work out. I really don't know. I don't know about any of these quarterbacks. I have no idea. I mean, only one went in the first two rounds. The rest of them are kind of crapshoots. We'll see. I'm just not as high on him as they seem to be over there at Crane & Company. The injury thing, yeah, you know, Sam Darnold's been injured every year. Corral may have an opportunity to jump in. Anytime you bring up Tom Brady as the example, that's probably unfair to compare anybody to. Hey, remember when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and it led to Tom Brady? Well, don't worry. If Sam Darnold gets hurt, the Panthers will be fine. And that's, you know, that's not really a fair thing to do. But the point being, there could be some opportunities for Corral because Darnold has not made it through a full season just yet. I mean, one year he got mono. Going back to Seinfeld, the episode when George gets, how often do you hear of an adult getting mono? George Costanza got mono and became really smart. Sam Darnold got mono and couldn't finish the season. So, you know, there may be an opportunity for Corral. Which takes me to this. When we look at the rookie quarterbacks, who could have, or I should say, better phrased, when should we expect to see these guys? Let's run through them briefly, one by one. For Kenny Pickett, the first quarterback off the board, I've said this on the show before, but if I look at the Steelers' schedule, you have Mitch Trubisky also in that quarterback room, and you begin on the road against Cincinnati week one. Then you get Bill Belichick week two. Then you go to Cleveland on a short week, week three. I would not want Kenny Pickett out there for any of those. I would be very patient. I'm always of the school of thought. If you listen to the show, you should know I'm always of the school of thought, I'm patient with my quarterbacks. Because I know the idea is you got to win now while they're on this rookie deal. But to me, I view it as a long-term investment. I want this guy for 15 years. So I'm not going to try to speed up the process and jeopardize the future for a couple of games in year one. Take a whole year off if you want, if it's going to make you better down the road, because I hope you're going to be my quarterback for the next 15 years. So if for you to be the best quarterback for those 15 years, if that requires sitting year one, so be it. Let's start Mitch Trubisky for a year. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. I think he's built up enough equity he could have a bad year with Trubisky at quarterback. But we know people are impatient nowadays. So I do think we see Trubisky, Kenny Pickett, fairly early. I'd put him in week four. You get the Jets week four. They had a terrible secondary last year. You get them at home, and you get them on an extended break. You play the Browns on Thursday, then you get ready for the Jets the following Sunday. So you get extra time to ease in Kenny Pickett. You do it at home against a bad team. If I'm the Steelers, I am not starting Pickett right away. I'm not starting him the first 3 weeks. I'll wait until week four if you want him playing as early as he can. Week four is the spot. For the Falcons, will we see Desmond Ridder this year? You know, none of these quarterbacks were taken high enough that they need to be out there. But they also went to teams that also don't have quarterbacks that have very safe jobs. Marcus Mariota is not your long-term answer. He's just a bridge right now. So I think we could see Ridder at some point. Now, if I look at the Falcons, I think the Falcons will be 1-6 to start the year. Maybe like a 2-5. But look at their schedule. It's pretty ridiculous early on. Right? You get the Saints. Then you get the Rams. The Seahawks is winnable. That may be the only win. The Browns, let's assume Deshaun's playing. The Buccaneers, the Niners, the Bengals. Those are all playoff teams outside of the Seahawks now. And the Saints just missed the playoffs. That's not an easy game for the Falcons. Could be winnable. So maybe they're 2-5. Best case scenario, maybe 3-4 is the best hope to start the year. And when they take on the Panthers week 8, they'll already be, you know, potentially 1-6, 2-5. I don't think you go to Ridder that early. But my point is, the Falcons season will probably be over by Halloween. So at a certain point, you might as well run Ridder out there for a couple games just to see. And I always like giving quarterbacks extra time, like I said. So the bye is in week 14. Week 15, you're at New Orleans, though. That's a tough defense on the road. Then you get Baltimore after that. That's tough. Cardinals, Buccaneers to finish the year. There's not really a good spot for the Falcons to ease in their rookie quarterback. But I expect that their season's going to be so lost by December, and with a great quarterback draft class next year, they'll run Ridder out there maybe week 15, 16, 17, just to see what he has for a game or two, to see if he has that potential to be the guy, or if you have to go draft somebody else. Because Mariota's not that guy, and the Falcons are going to be in last place. When it comes to the Panthers, to me, similar in that the way their schedule begins, the Browns, the Giants is winnable. Then you get the Saints, the Cardinals, the Niners, the Rams, the Bucks. By the time they play the Falcons, week 8, the week of Halloween, their season may be over as well for the Panthers. When you might see Matt Corral, I would say week 14. By then, the season could be lost. The Panthers have their bye week 13. And that's when I always love to break in a young guy. They play the Broncos week 12. I don't want him facing the Broncos. So then week 13, you get a bye. You're 12 games in. The Panthers will probably be like 4-8. Season's over. Okay, now you come out. We're in December. 1 month to go. Sam Darnold's clearly not the guy. He's about to be a free agent. And you come off a bye, you play Seattle. Seattle probably be a last place team. That's when I'd put in Matt Corral. Week 14. You get two extra weeks, or you get an extra week. You get 2 weeks to prepare for Seattle. Bad team. After that, you get the Steelers, who probably won't be in playoff contention by week 15. Then you get the Lions, whose season will probably be over by week 16. And then you finish the year with the Bucs and the Saints. Maybe the Bucs are already clinched. The Saints maybe aren't a playoff team at that point. Who knows? That's when I would look for Corral. Not sooner, unless Darnold gets hurt. But once I reach week 14, all right, just had our bye, and now we have maybe an easier portion of the schedule. And then lastly, real quick, Malik Willis with the Titans. I don't think you see him until maybe week 18 if they have the division clinched, because Ryan Tannehill, you're paying him a lot of money. He's a veteran. You're trying to get back to the playoffs. I think you ride with Tannehill throughout the year. And Sam Howell with the Washington football team. Unless things really go south with Carson Wentz, I don't know if you see Sam Howell this year either. Otherwise, potentially, again, same idea, like December, season may be lost. Carson Wentz, clearly not your guy. They have their bye week on December 11th. Maybe you come back with Sam Howell after that, and he plays the final four games, starting with the Giants at home in whatever that is, week 15. That's not a bad spot. We'll wrap up hour one next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Do you have my way?
Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. On the text line, someone says, I really like Matt Carroll for the Panthers. Corral. He told his friends they are a fit before he even got drafted by Carolina. Real confident, fierce, has a chip on his shoulder. And yeah, we'll see if it works out. You know, the interesting part, as we were trying to predict when you may see some of these rookie quarterbacks this year, what's interesting about Carolina is we're really going to put to the test this whole five-year window that Matt Rhule said David Tepper told him about. And now Matt Rhule said publicly last week, hey, when they hired me, they told me I have 5 years. Well, if you really believe that, then there's no rush at the quarterback position, right? You can get Corral out there this year if the season's not going well. Because you figure, I got 5 years to get this right. This is year three. So we're not winning games right now. That's okay. I still got two more years to work with. Let's see what Corral's got. But if Matt Rhule's feeling the pressure and he needs to win some games, even if Sam Darnold's not playing great, I think you still stick with the veteran because that gives you a better chance than the unproven rookie playing for the first time. So that's the tricky spot for Carolina. If the season is lost, by the end of the year, is Rhule willing to go to Corral knowing that I still need some wins to try to keep my job? Or will he feel confident enough thinking, you know what, David Tepper promised me 5 years no matter what happens. Let's go to Corral, because even if we win only five games again this year, I'll be back next year. That'll be the interesting dynamic, maybe the most interesting thing about the Panthers this year as the season unfolds. When we come back, we'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling. We'll get prepped for the PGA Championship, which begins tomorrow. Hour two next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.